This is Dr. Dave Mathewson and his teaching on third semester Greek. This is session number 12 on participles.
Now we enter the wonderful world of participles. And one grammarian once ascribed Greek as a participle-loving language, and that's certainly true. You look at the virtually any page except for maybe genealogies and Matthew 1 or something like that, look at virtually any page of the Greek New Testament, you're going to find participles. And so it's important to grasp them and understand what they're doing. A participle, by its very name, grammars usually describe participles as a verbal adjective. That is, it participates in qualities of both a verb and even functions like a verb, but it also has qualities of an adjective. And even when you parse it, it has tense or aspect and voice, but then it also has case gender to it as well, and a case gender or case and number to it, gender and number to it as well. So it kind of participates in both features. And so I think one of the best ways to understand participles is to see how they function and to see what they do in various contexts. And generally there are, one way to understand participles is there are at least four functions of the participle. One of those is adjectival or attributive. And here's where a participle, remember we said in a sentence, to just use this one, in a sentence, these can be seen as containers that can be filled by various things. And this little leg here or branch is the modifier container. And a participle can fill the modifier container of a noun anywhere in a sentence. That is, it can act like an adjective. Again, we can look at some examples at some point, but adjectival participle. Another function of the participle is substantival. So now, the participle does not modify a noun. It actually fills the container of a subject or a direct object or a dative indirect object. Or in the genitive case, it could show possession or something like that. It can do anything a noun can. But it still gets the verbal quality. It still will communicate a voice and aspect as well. And then a third one is the adverbial participle. And this is probably one of the more common functions. And in this case, the participle fills the adverb modifier slot container. So again, if you see this, as a kind of a container that can be filled with, you know, an adverb we've seen, even an adjective, sometimes a noun in the accusative can fill that container, but a participle can fill that container as well. Then one other one is what is known as the periphrastic participle. What this is, you know, some people look at that periphrastic and freak out, and but it shouldn't throw you off if you are an English speaker. We use periphrastic constructions all the time. We say, I am studying, or I am going to the library, or she is going to the library. We use periphrastic constructions, a form of is followed by a participle. I am running. Am would be a form of the word is, and then running is your participle. Greek does that too. Amy plus a participle. usually in that order too. Sometimes some a few instances the participle will come first, but it's usually a me, a form of a me in the present or imperfect, followed by a participle. That would be a periphrastic construction. So those are your most common usage. We could add a fifth one. Sometimes the participle can function like a normal verb. There aren't very many examples of that in the Greek New Testament, but it often can do that. Otherwise, I want to focus on these four usages. Now, again, the adjectival participle and the substantival participle kind of parallel the adjective. Remember, when we looked at adjectives, they can function attributively, modifying another noun, and substantively, acting like a noun. But the participle can function in a similar way. If it's attributive or adjectival, the participle will agree with the noun it's modifying in case, gender, and number. Just like an adjective, just like the attributive adjective, agrees with the noun it modifies in case, gender, and number. The same is true with the adjectival participle. The substantival participle will be an example of the participle functioning on its own. That is, it's not modifying another noun. It's acting like a noun itself. And the case, gender, and number of the substantival participle will depend on the context. Whether it, you know, it's referring to one or two, one person or more persons, or one thing or more things, whether it is functioning as the subject or direct object, that will determine the case. Or the gender will again be determined by, is it referring to a male or female or impersonal entity? That will all determine the gender of the participle. So case, gender, and number. Participles don't have person. They're impersonal verbs. Outside of the normal verb forms, you don't get person with infinitives and participles. So you'll notice when you parse it, you don't parse person. The adverbial participle then, again, functions to modify a verb in the sentence, including it could modify another participle. It can modify any verb form. It doesn't have to be the main verb, but that's one of the frequent uses of it, of the adverbial participle, to fill the container of an adverbial verbal modifier. That is, it will modify a verb form in the sentence, and we'll talk more about that. The periphrastic construction, a me plus the participle, I find it helpful to view that as filling the verb container. Both a me, again, a me will be, it can be in any number or person, or it could be present or imperfect or future, any of the tense forms that it can occur in. But a me and the participle together fill the container of a verb. It acts like a main verb in a sentence. That's a helpful way, I think, to look at it. Most of my attention will be on the adverbial participle, and we'll give some examples of that, but I want to talk a little bit about how do we identify these. Let me give you a suggestion. You might find this helpful if you like flowcharts. So, let's say this is any given participle that you find in the New Testament. All right? Whenever you encounter, and you know, this will seem mechanical at first, but hopefully it gets faster and you kind of do it intuitively. But the first question you should ask of a participle is, does it have an article in front of it? That's the first question you should ask. If the answer is yes, It is automatically an adjectival participle. No question. So this is something, I wouldn't say you bet your life on it, but this is something you can count on. That if you see a participle with an article, it is going to be adjectival. Now, once you decide it's adjectival, you still have two options. And the next question is, does it modify another noun? In the same case, gender, number. If it does, if the answer is yes, it is attributive. If it's an adjectival participle, has an article, adjectival, it modifies another noun, in the same case, gender, number, it will be attributive. To use an English example, the student who was studying in the library would be an English way of translating it. That would be an example of an attributive participle, who was studying, modifying student. And the participle in Greek would be in the same case, gender, and number as student. However, if the answer is no, it doesn't modify a noun, then it is substantival. It's acting like a noun, like the subject or direct object. So I might say, the one studying will get an A. The one studying might be, in Greek, a substantival participle. It's the subject of the sentence. The one studying, subject, will get, verb, an A. So, again, if you see a participle with an article, you should automatically conclude it's going to be adjectival. But then you still have another question. Does it modify a noun? If it does, it's attributive. If it doesn't modify a noun, in the same case, gender, and number, there still could be a noun, it just won't be in the same case, gender, and number as the participle. If it stands alone, it doesn't modify a noun, it's probably substantival. With the article. What if it doesn't? What if the answer is no, there is no article? Then, the next question I would ask is it in the nominative case? If it is, it is going to be adverbial. That is, it will modify the verb. It will fill the verb modifier container. Again, if you see the verb in the sentence, and again, here's the modifier container, that little leg that we've seen before. If the participle will be, it's in the nominative case, no article, it's functioning to modify the verb, an adverbial participle. And, you know, something in English, the student studied Greek while eating lunch. So while eating lunch would be the way to translate an adverbial participle, and it tells us something about when the student was studying Greek. He was studying while eating lunch. So the adverbial participle will fill the modifier slot. So that's no article. Again, this isn't noun, this is no article, it's in the nominative case, you're probably looking at an adverbial participle. Now, there's one other option, if it comes with a me, you're looking at a periphrastic participle. I think it'll still be nominative, but it follows the verb a me. That's your key. If you see a me followed by a participle, it's periphrastic. Now, I have a dotted line because, especially if it's not in the nominative case, it's still possible for participles without articles to be adjectival. So notice what I've done. If it has the article, it's automatically adjectival. Without the article, that's not a guarantee that it's adjectival. It highly likely is if it's in the nominative case. But if it's, you know, even then, and off, usually if it's in another case, then you're going to want to run it back through the adjectival and say, does it modify another? You know, if this doesn't work, especially if it's in the genitive case or accusative or dative case, if this doesn't work, it's not adverbial, then run it back through the adjectival side. So again, the article is a guarantee that you've got adjectival. Lack of the article is an indication that you're highly likely have adverbial if it's in the nominative case. But if that doesn't work, run it back through this. And if it modifies another noun, it's attributive. If not, it's substantival. If that doesn't work, take some aspirin and sleep it off and try again in the morning. No, I found this kind of process of thinking through participles actually works most of the time. You know, you're always going to find examples that don't budge, that require a little more work, and you use the tools to help you figure it out. But I found that this sort of a process, running the participles through this grid, works in a surprisingly large number of examples. And again, it's kind of slow at first, but the key factor is the article, presence or absence of the article right before the participle. All right? Well, what I want to do is focus on examples, how we handle the adverbial participle. Let me just say something about the periphrastic. The periphrastic participle is the word periphrastic kind of means just a more detailed or roundabout way of saying something. So often you'll find the periphrastic participle paralleling the normal tense forms or aspects of the verb you learned. For example, a present tense a me followed by a present participle. I'll just use luo, loose, but luon. I am loosing is parallel to luo. No, we could say it's just, in a sense, it's, I wouldn't say it's equal to, but it parallels the present active indicative for singular. A me plus luo. Again, it'd be like saying in English, I loose or I am loosing. Both of those are valid ways to express the verb loose in English. One of them is a simple construction, I loose, like luo. The other is a periphrastic, I am, a me, loosing. So that's one way of expressing. You could also use the imperfect tense of a me. I was loosing. So the main thing I want to draw your attention to is just be aware when you translate participles or translate the periphrastic participle that you will find that the different periphrastic constructions can substitute for or have parallels in the other tense forms that you learned. One example of a periphrastic construction that seems to get a lot of attention is found in Matthew's Gospel, and I believe I'm looking for chapter 19 in Jesus' instructions to his disciples. There's a chapter 18. Within the context of Jesus' instruction on church discipline, and Jesus tells his disciples in the context of that, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And the constructions in both of those is, it's a periphrastic construction, will be bound. Here you have a future of a me followed by a perfect participle. In other words, this is an example where there isn't a parallel in the normal Greek verbs, the indicative verbs that the tensor aspects that we talked about. This is kind of a future perfect construction. And usually the aspect is indicated main by the participle in these sorts of constructions. So in this case, you have a future of eimi, will be, and then dedemena, bound. And in this case, if the author wants to show future perfect, he really didn't have an option in normal verb constructions. But that's a classic example from Matthew 18 of a periphrastic construction, eimi followed by a participle. Another interesting one is found in the book of Revelation in the first chapter in John's vision, vision of the risen Christ, and verse 18, when he sees this vision of Christ, he falls down his feet, and Jesus appears to him and says, "Do not fear, I am the first and the last." And then this is Revelation chapter 1 and verse 18. "Do not fear, I am the first and last, and the one living," zone, here's a substantival participle, the living one, an article followed by a participle, and it's not modifying another noun, the living one, "and I was dead, and behold, I am living." It's zone eimi. And notice here, the participle, it's flipped, it comes first. So this follows, the author just could have used zoe, I am living, it comes from za'o, the verb za'o, he just could have used the present active indicative, but he used a periphrastic construction, eimi, and the participle. But notice he's flipped it, and he's put the participle first. That probably draws more attention to the participle by doing that. So just two examples of periphrastic constructions. But adverbial participles, I want to just say something about them and then give you a couple of examples of how they work. Again, the way I want to approach it is to kind of contrast my approach with the way you often find adverbial participles treated in grammars. Again, we're only talking about adverbial, where the participle fills the verb modifier container. It's modifying the verb. All right? Now, the way it's that adverbial participles are often treated is we're told that when it comes to adverbs, so we're not talking about substantival or adjectival or periphrastic or anything else. We're talking about adverbial participles. Usually we're told there are 8 or 9 different kinds of adverbial participles. And so you'll find in grammars there's causal participles, participle of means, temporal participle, participle of time, a causal participle, conditional participle, concessive participle, although you'll find at least 8, and I think Dan Wallace's grammar has 9, he has a result participle as well. But all these adverbial categories that you find elsewhere expressed in other constructions in the New Testament attached to adverbial participles. And that would seem natural in that these participles are functioning adverbially, so it would seem natural that they would indicate these sorts of adverbial meanings: cause, time, manner, means, condition, concession, result. You'll find most participles using these most grammars using these categories to describe adverbial participles. And so your job in doing exegesis is to go through the text and label the adverbial participles. Again, we're not talking about other types of participles, according to one of these labels. However, a couple of things. I think that adverbial participles are intentionally ambiguous. In other words, they're a perfect construction for the author to use when he doesn't want to commit himself to one of those functions. For example, if the author wants to express purpose, he has really clear ways of doing so with a henna clause. Or we'll see that later on in a later lecture, certain infinitive constructions clearly express purpose. Or some prepositional phrases, like with pros or ace, can express purpose. Or time, or cause. Cause, a hati clause, is a clear way of expressing cause. So the author had really clear ways of expressing cause, or manner, or time, or purpose, if that was his purpose and intention. It seems to me that participles are indeterminative. They're not marked for those meanings, and I think that's one of the reasons why authors often use them, because they're not trying to focus on or communicate purpose or time or manner or means. And it's not that those meanings aren't present. It's if they are, they're in the larger context, the relationship of the whole clause to the clause that it's the participles modifying. That's where you often find these meanings, but the participles themselves don't carry these meanings. And so that shouldn't be our primary intention in analyzing participles. And again, just kind of anecdotally, I remember when I was using these categories, fresh out of seminary, armed with all these categories, and in sermon preparation, using these categories, and at one point I stopped and thought, why did I label this a causal participle? And I couldn't answer that question. And I found out more and more, I was just kind of intuitively what seemed to make sense and maybe theologically what fit. That's how I was labeling these participles. So I would suggest that we probably avoid these labels, at least when it comes to trying to determine what kind of participle we're dealing with. And certainly, I think it's inaccurate to say these are different types of participles or kinds of participles. No, a participle is a participle is a participle. And they all have the same endings, so that these labels at best, cause, manner, means, time, purpose, concession, come from the broader context. And even then, that's probably not the main intention that the author is getting across with the use of the participle. Again, I think participles are indeterminate. Adverbial participles we're talking about are indeterminate. They're not marked for those meanings. So how does an adverbial participle function? How should we analyze them? I suggest that we boil the adverbial participle down to two functions. And again, we're only talking about adverbial. Don't confuse that with adjectival, or don't apply this to substantival or periphrastics. We're only talking about adverbials. The main thing you want to pay attention to is, where does the participle, the adverbial participle, occur in relationship to the main verb? If it precedes the verb, it is probably giving background information, kind of prerequisite background information that simply is background to the main point, which is in the main verb. We'll look at some examples of that. And also, along with that, it probably indicates action that takes place before, sometimes at the same time as, but before the action of the main verb. But this is to be seen as prerequisite, again, background information, necessary information, that only is a background to the accomplishment of the main action, which is in the main verb. Again, this is not a participle construction, but if I say, I went to the store and I bought some milk, going to the store is not my main point. That's only necessary prerequisite for the main goal, which is to purchase milk. And so that's kind of how the participle, adverbial participle, when it precedes the main verb, it gives you background, prerequisite, necessary information for the accomplishment of the action in the main verb. And usually prior action, action that takes place prior to the main verb. If the participle comes after the main verb, it tends to further describe and define the action of the main verb and tell us what the action of the main verb entails, or kind of further impacts it. So those are, I think, the only two categories that you need to worry about. Should make it easier instead of 8 or 9. Now you have 2 to worry about. But I think this is closer to how we should understand the participle working. But again, the key is in relationship to the verb that the participle, adverbial participle, is modifying, does it come before or after it? If it comes before, it's giving prerequisite background information. In other words, that's not the focus of attention. Background information to the accomplishment of the action of the main verb, which is your focus of attention. And then if the participle comes after, the adverbial participle comes after the main verb, it's giving further detail. It's further defining or describing the action of the main verb. So let's look at just a couple of examples quickly. One of them is found in Matthew chapter 2 in a narrative text in the Matthew's infancy narrative. And look at chapter 2 and verse 3, for example. There's all kinds of examples of this in Matthew chapter 2, a lot of interesting examples of the adverbial participle. But chapter 2 and verse 3, but having heard, there's your adverbial participle. Notice, nominative case, no article. And I'm going to try adverbial participle, and in this case, it works really well. So, King Herod, or having heard, King Herod was troubled. There's some words in between. I won't write them all out. I'll just write out the participle and the main verb. Let's see, where was I? Atarakthe. Having heard, King Herod was troubled. So here's your main verb, was troubled. What is the participle doing? Again, it's simply giving necessary but background and prerequisite. The action of hearing is just background to and prerequisite to the main point, which is being troubled. Now, could we say this is causal? It's the cause of being troubled? Yeah, we could. That seems to work, but that doesn't seem to be the point. And there's nothing in the context that would clearly point to cause as the main thing. I think it's far better just to say the adverbial participle comes before the main verb. Therefore, it's giving prerequisite or background information to the accomplishment of the action of being troubled. And there's other examples of that we could look at in Matthew chapter 2. That's just one that we find. Another interesting example of the participle coming after the main verb. In Ephesians chapter 5, this is the well-known being filled with the Spirit passage. So Paul commands his readers with an imperative towards the in Ephesians chapter 5. And verse 17. So that was Matthew chapter 2 and verse 3. And now we're going to switch over to Ephesians chapter 5 and 17, actually through 21. So chapter 5, verse 17. Because of this, do not be... verse 18. I'm going to start with verse 18. We could read 17. Verse 18, and do not be drunk with wine, which is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit. Pleroustha, a present imperative. Be filled with the Spirit. So there's your main verb. Now what follows is a string of adverbial participles. laluntes. Notice no article, nominative case. Laluntes. Adantes, singing and psalming. Salantes, psalming your heart. And then verse 20, giving thanks. Eucharistuntes. Giving thanks always in the name of Jesus Christ, our Lord. The Lord Jesus Christ giving thanks to God the Father. So notice you have this string of adverbial participles, no articles, and they're all in the nominative case. I would actually add verse 21. It's interesting. Verse 21 begins with another participle in the nominative case. So I think even though most English translations and Greek texts start a new paragraph at verse 21, I think it belongs. Hupa tasamanoi, submitting to one another. In other words, you have a string of five participles following pleirousthe. So how do we analyze that? We could spend time, are these the cause of being filled? Are these the means of being filled? Is this the manner of being filled? I think in Dan Wallace's grammar, he has a long discussion. He says it's the result because that fits better Paul's theology. Notice that he has appealed not to grammar, but to Paul's theology. Or should we maybe better say, these are all adverbial participles that follow the main verb. It's an imperative, but it's still the main verb. They follow the main verb, so they simply further define or describe what it means to be filled with the Spirit. And whether these are the cause of being filled or the means or result, that's not the point. You can talk about that in more theological terms, but grammatically, the only thing going on here is a string of five adverbial participles following the verb that further define and describe what being filled with the Spirit means. So I find that a lot more helpful way of looking at adverbial participles by, and again, we're only talking about adverbial participles, but by asking, do they come before or after the verb they modify? If they come before, they're giving background, prerequisite information to the accomplishment of the verb. If they come after, they're further defining or describing what the action of the verb is or what it entails.
This is Dr. Dave Mathewson and his teaching on third semester Greek. This is session number 12 on participles.